This is SB Nation AM.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Hey, good morning. Welcome, SB Nation AM, SB Nation Radio. Glad you could be with us as we continue to look ahead to Super Bowl 54. But this week, we're also still looking at the legacy of Kobe Bryant and how it's being thought about around the league, how it's being processed by those in the league, and also fans around the world. Something interesting happened last night in the Indiana Pacers-Chicago Bulls game. Victor Oladipo, who had not played in a calendar year due to a major injury, was finally put into the lineup for the Pacers last night in their game against the Bulls. And got a standing ovation and, you know, good cheers. He'd been, you know, been struggling through an injury for a long time. Usually when we say year in sports, we usually mean a season. But in his case, it was actually a 12-month kind of calendar year out of the league, based on, you know, trying to rehab. Throughout the game, he was taking some three-pointers that weren't being, you know, weren't knocked down, and he wasn't hitting his shots. But that's okay. You know, you got to get your feet wet. You're coming back into the league. You're taking your shots. You're getting back up into game speed. But when the Pacers needed somebody to make a big three at the end of regulation to send the game into overtime, Victor Oladipo came through, and he knocked down the three that sent it into overtime, and the Pacers won the game. At the end of the game, when talking about the three, he said it was for Kobe, Mamba mentality took over. You're going to hear that a lot from players. You're going to hear that a lot from players even outside of basketball. It's something that is just going to permeate through the sports world.
Yeah, you know, I mean, be honest with you, I'm saying it at home.
Sure, right?
You know, my son, had he missed 2 days of school this week because he was sick. Went to school yesterday, came home. He's like, Dad, I have so much homework. And it's due Friday for him. And I'm like, just, you know, start chipping away at it. You know, just one page at a time.
Mamba mentality.
Mamba mentality. And he wanted to quit. He was done. And I'm like, how would you feel if you could just get one more page in?
Yep.
And it's just math homework. I'm like, just one more. Mamba mentality.
Mamba mentality. So Victor Oladipo, last night, you may have missed it. One of the little side stories in the NBA last night. But the big three that helped the Pacers get into overtime and win the game against the Bulls, Mamba mentality for Victor Oladipo. Something else that happened in the NBA last night that was real interesting in New York. There were actually two things in the Knicks game that we got to talk about. That's coming up next as we roll along on SB Nation AM.
No matter what you are. It's Thursday, which means it's Throwback Thursday on SB Nation AM. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
1971 on Throwback Thursday. On this date, 1971, John Wooden and UCLA beat Santa Barbara. And then they would not lose again for 87 more games.
That's insane.
Accumulating in the longest college basketball win streak. No, wait a minute. I think San Francisco actually had that. Maybe. But 88 games a lot.
San Francisco had 60.
Oh, that's 60. Okay, so they had 88.
Better. But the longest
streak.
That's
right, Bill Russell and San Francisco back in the 60s.
But the longest streak goes to UConn.
UConn women.
Yeah, they went to 90.
Yep, they did. That's right, 90. God, it's a lot of games not to lose. Have a bad night.
Real quick, a few weeks ago, I don't even remember why we did it, but a few weeks ago we did 1972.
Yes.
And remember, we kept commenting about how terrible the music was in 1972?
Yeah.
This is only a year earlier, so
far
we're hitting it pretty good. What?
Very good.
What happened in that year that we're not aware of?
I don't know. What did happen in 19... What transitioned into the one year and another year? These are great songs.
I mean, it's literally a year apart, basically. I mean, save a few weeks here or there. It was like the music just dropped off the face of the planet.
No kidding. God, every song we've played so far this morning on Throwback Thursday has been great. This is fantastic.
You know, we'll have some fun ones. I got some fun ones planned for
us.
But
of course.
But my God.
So last night, did you see the scruffle at the Knicks game last night at Madison Square Garden? Ton of fun there.
Aren't there always scruffles at
Knicks? Yeah, this is great.
in Madison Square Garden.
So the Memphis Grizzlies were playing the Knicks last night, and of course Memphis was blowing them away, right? They were up 18 points late in the game, and Jay Crowder stole an inbound pass, because why not? There was like 48 seconds left to go, right? So what does Crowder do after he steals the inbound pass underneath his own basket? Instead of just throwing it right up and in and scoring and having this team go up by 20, he dribbles the ball out to the three-point line on the baseline and tries to launch up a three. All right. But Elfried Payton decides, oh, I've had enough of this, and just shoves him to the ground. Just like, instead of just, doesn't even make it like, oh, I'll just slightly bump him, or he just went, oh, no way, shoves to the ground, and Jay Crowder falls down. And obviously the players got in a little bit of a scruffle. They had to be broken up. There's kind of a, you know, separation had to happen. But then afterwards, this is why I kind of brought it up. Marcus Morris of the Knicks says that Jay Crowder had some female tendencies and was very womanlike. He said, quote, he's soft. His game is soft. He's soft. Very womanlike. He apologized later, saying, I have the utmost respect for females. Blah, blah, blah. You know, how quickly did somebody grab him and go, come here, come here. We're nipping this in the bud right now. You're apologizing for that statement. But It was completely Bush League. I mean, it was a terrible... Jay Crowder, he had to know something like that was coming. You're up by 18 with less than a minute to go, and you steal an inbound pass, and you decide to dribble out for three. This is, as it's been described, like stealing second with an 8-run lead. Okay? These are just things you don't do. But if I'm the Knicks, okay? If I'm the Knicks, if I'm the players in that organization, I chip in and pay the fine that's coming for Payton, because Payton's going to get one, because it was a blatant shove and knockdown, and the league is just going to punish the way it does. It's going to say, oh, you owe us 25 grand or whatever. If I'm the players, I chip in and I pay this fine. This was, you need a little bit of solidarity on a team that's going absolutely nowhere, and the fans are frustrated, and we'll get to that in a second. But what Elfried Payton did was probably right. He absolutely was right. I mean, that was just absolutely uncalled for by Jay Crowder to run to the three-point line to try to launch it up. You're losing by 18, and I'm sure it's frustrating, but somebody's trying to dagger you like that, yeah, knock him on the ground. But what happened afterwards, so here's the melee that's ensuing, right? There's less than a minute to go, and the fans are still at Madison Square Garden. Instead of cheering Payton for knocking down Jay Crowder for his ridiculous attempt at the three-pointer, everyone at the Garden starts chanting, sell the team, sell the team, sell the team. I got a theory on this. This is frustrating for Knicks fans because the team is losing, but I think it's frustrating for them when a team comes into the Garden like Memphis that struggled, looking for an identity, looking to rebuild, finds a guy like Ja Morant, you know, trading Mike Conley, getting Ja Morant, building some pieces. The Grizzlies are not a great team, but they're a lot better team. And they're actually fun. I watch them a number of times. You know, they're the local NBA team where I live, besides the Atlanta Hawks. I watch them occasionally. They're a fun team to watch when Ja Morant's playing well. They really are. They've got some really good play. Dylan Brooks is really good, the kid from Oregon. Jaren Jackson can play. Valanciunas is still playing in this league. He's getting double-doubles tonight for the Grizzlies. The thing with the Grizzlies is about a 500 team. They're not great. They're not awful. But think about this if you're a Knicks fan. If you're a Knicks fan and you're watching Ja Morant go for 18 points, 20 points, whatever, and then you look at your team, and you've got R.J. Barrett and no significant look of improvement whatsoever. Doesn't that get frustrating that they're not doing anything like what Memphis is doing or whatever other young team that comes in to play the Knicks and beats the Knicks and then just leaves?
I think it's just got to be frustrating just being a Knick.
Oh, of course.
I mean, just everything that's going on with that organization is it's laughable now.
But you've got to be like, wait a minute, why aren't we doing what they're doing? Look, we're not asking to win a championship right out of the gate, but why can't we be like this team? Like, why can't we get a young kid in the draft that takes over, plays well, and we build on that? And look, go and be 500 at this point. Maybe talking and maybe knocking on the door in an 8 seed or a 7 seed in the Eastern Conference, like what the Grizzlies are doing in the West. Why are we in the basement? Why are we losing every single night? Why are they, who used to lose every single night, now winning as much as they're losing? Why aren't we doing that? I don't blame them. Sell the team, sell the team. It's got to be in the hands of somebody else. Somebody who says, you know, no, there's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. But I would also caution you on this. And I'm not cautioning you on getting rid of James Dolan. Get rid of James Dolan. If you want to pressure him to sell the team, good luck. But they brought Phil Jackson in and he couldn't do anything. Right? I mean, I don't know who you could have as a coach that could turn it around. I mean, they've tried everybody and they can't get it. They can't get a formula to work. They've had high draft picks. They've gotten, you know, Phil Jackson to sort of implement a way to build the franchise back up again. He didn't do anything. They've gotten coaches. Can't do anything. I mean, I don't know what works. I mean, listen, don't you think that if they had won the Zion Williamson sweepstakes, they would have botched it and Williamson wouldn't even be back right now, or he'd probably be even more injured than he was before
I was going to go I wouldn't say he wouldn't be back. I would have said they would have played him early.
Right, right. Oh, look at that. Zion's done for the year because the dumb Knicks started him in a game in December that he wasn't ready to play in.
Honestly, he's got two legs.
Right, go out there and play.
Go out there and play.
You know?
Just wrap it.
Just sell the team. Imagine being an owner of a team and nobody likes you.
Yeah.
Isn't part of being awesome? Being an owner is like you just own something people just love. You own a product that people want so badly to love about.
You know, for a lot of these owners, it's bragging rights. They've been very successful in whatever career they chose. A lot of times it's just real estate or oil or whatever it might be. They're very successful in their career path that they've chosen. So they have extra money. They have discretionary money. They just go and buy a team, kind of like bragging rights. And they can go to parties and go, hey, I'm the owner of this. James Dolan, everyone knows he's the owner of the Knicks.
And the one thing
And not in a good way.
Yeah, and the one thing about being an owner is of an NBA team or whatever. And, you know, even in a city like New York where there's a team in Brooklyn, you know, but most teams in sports – there's not another one of those in the city. So like, let's say you're a restaurateur and you go to a party. There might be four or five other restaurateurs in the city that you're competing against on a daily basis, right? If you're in energy, there might be another energy company. If you're in anything, whatever it is that you own, that you're a mogul in, you don't have a local monopoly on that thing. Owners do. Most owners do, right? You know, in most cities, there's only one NFL team, right? There's only one NBA team. There's only one Major League Baseball team. And you are the guy. You are the guy that owns that. And that's it. No one else can say, well, my basketball team is doing this, or my baseball team is doing that. I know the Cubs and the Yankees and the Mets and all that. But, you know, most of the time, that's it. That's all you have. That's it. But you want to have something. Obviously, the goal is to have something people are so passionate about because, you know, listen. You know, I may write a check every month for my electric bill, but I'm not passionate about my electric company. Like, I don't buy their jersey or shirt or hat. You know, it's a drag, right? Like I get to shop for my cable company or my internet company, but I don't wear gear that says, oh, I'm a proud Spectrum guy or a Charter guy or whatever it is, or an AT&T guy. I don't get to, but with sports, you have a product that people are begging to give you their money. I mean, they just can't wait to give you their money if you're doing well, if you're being successful. They can't wait to pay whatever it takes to be inside that building. Whatever it takes to buy the jersey of the latest superstar. Whatever it takes to anything that you're selling.
I mean, how bad is it? I'm always amazed. When the Astros won the World Series, there's a sporting goods store here in Houston called Academy. I don't know if they exist elsewhere. I think might just be a Texas thing. I don't know. But Academy stayed open 24 hours the year that they won the Super Bowl in 2017. And they were packed.
Sure.
People showing up from midnight to 4 a.m. There was a line out the door to get World Series gear. I was amazed by that. I'm like, are you kidding me?
And look, I'm not saying everybody is embedded with the desire to be popular and liked. Some people couldn't care less. Some people are on an island of themselves. But I think it takes a special, different mentality to be an owner of a sports team where everybody hates you and you being okay with that. Like if you're James Dolan and you really don't care that every single Knicks fan wants you to get rid of the team because you are a obstacle in the way to their happiness, I don't care who you are, how rich you are, how isolated you are. That has got to sting in some way. In some way, that's got to hurt. Maybe me, it would hurt me more than him, but it's still got a sting in a way, right? You're delivering a crappy product to a team for a fan base that is begging for you to deliver the goods. Sell the team. My God. There's a fight on the court and the fans go, here's an opportunity to remind Dolan how much we hate him. Instead of cheering the Knicks for standing up for themselves, they make sure James Dolan knows they can't stand him.
And you know what's funny? Remember when that first started happening, he would kick them out?
Oh, right. Exactly. Kick them out, right?
Now he can't. Because, I mean, if you do that, you're not going to be filling Madison Square Garden ever.
Oh, my God. I remember when he messed with Charles Oakley, man. Oakley is beloved. Beloved by Knicks fans. He messed with the wrong guy.
Yeah, Oakley knew that, too.
Oakley totally knew that.
Whatever.
That's right. Oakley totally knew that. All right, again, on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with your two N's. Your thoughts. We get ready more. Getting closer to the Super Bowl. We'll talk more about the game coming up, including the Chiefs' defense. Can it stop the run? And Kansas City, in terms of what it can do against Garoppolo if he has to throw. It's coming up on SB Nation AM.
Thursday, which means it's Throwback Thursday on SB Nation AM. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Tears of a Clown, Smokey Robinson, spinning the hits of 1971 on SB Nation AM on a Throwback Thursday. The great music continues. God, we ought to do some of the early 70s more. Oh, wait, we did that once.
Yeah.
But it was a couple weeks ago. We did 1972. It's good stuff. UCLA's 88-game win streak began on this date with a win over Santa Barbara, and they would not lose again until January of 1974 when they lost to Notre Dame. And a 32-year-old Digger Phelps.
Who?
Digger Phelps. Good old Digger. 32 years old coaching the Notre Dame basketball team. That must have been a nice night when he topped John Wooden. Gosh. So we were talking about the Super Bowl. Obviously, coming up on Sunday. Now, look, two things about this game. A couple of things about this game. One, as I was talking about this earlier, look, do not get into the habit of thinking or get into the trap of thinking this is the exciting Patrick Mahomes going up against game manager Jimmy Garoppolo. Garoppolo can do a lot of good things when he has to throw the ball. They didn't have to in the playoffs, so they didn't. But he can. He did it many times during the regular season. But he's going to go up against a Kansas City pass defense that is eighth in the NFL against the pass. So look, this could be a real good battle between two really good pass defense. Because you know who the number one team in the league against the pass is? San Francisco. You're talking about a San Francisco defense that can get pressure with just four guys up front and then also limit any of the lanes that you have to throw. There's a lot of people buzzing about the possibility of the Chiefs blowing this game out. I think that aspect alone keeps this game in check. Now, I think the Chiefs still win this, but I think this game gets away from San Francisco late, but not early. Not early. I think this Niners defense is too good to get down in a hole where this becomes just this coronation of greatness for Patrick Mahomes in Kansas City. Yes, they have tremendous weapons. Of course, they've got tremendous speed. But I think this Niners defense, which can get you pressure, and then also they drop linebackers back. They've got great secondary. They are, you know, in tremendous coverage. I think it caused problems for Kansas City, but I do think the Chiefs in the end pull away from this 49ers team. But I think this is going to be close and worth the edge of your seat entertainment that you're going to get in this Super Bowl. You know, last year people talked about how boring the Super Bowl was, but in reality it was boring because there wasn't any high-flying offense, but it was close enough to keep you interested. In the end, you didn't really know which direction it was going to go. Right? In the end, you were still wondering, would the Rams make a play or two to take the lead in this game, or would the Patriots take a score and take a lead where they could be comfortable? But I think this game has those elements to it. Defensive battles are fun. I think people want offense in this one because of what Patrick Mahomes can bring. I think the excitement of what the Kansas City offense is, I think this is what people want. I think people want the Chiefs to do Chiefs things, right? Mahomes things, Tyreek Hill things. I think that's understandable. And likewise, on the flip side of that, when you've got Mostert, when you've got Garoppolo, you got Deebo Samuel, when you got, you know, Emmanuel Sanders, when you got George Kittle, I think you'd want to see that offense come alive a little bit too, and to do 49er thing. I just think defensively though, that you might see that as more prevalent than the offenses. But like I said, I think the idea that this Chiefs team is an unstoppable offense, you know, if you believe that, you may be right, but how many times have you heard that in this league and then wondered how that team is not a Super Bowl champion? How many times did we, you know, how many times did we say that about the Denver Broncos back when they played the Seahawks? And we knew the Seahawks defense was really good. We knew they were outstanding. But how many of us going into Super Bowl 48 said, yeah, you know, Seattle's defense, man, I mean, it's fantastic, Legion of Boom and all, but that's Peyton Manning. I mean, they're putting up 30 plus a game. How are you going to stop that? Or how, even if you keep it in check, can you score enough to stay with them? Even if they don't explode, they're still going to score. Well, they didn't. They only had 8 points. Now, am I predicting that kind of defensive performance for the 49ers? No. I think this could be at times difficult for Mahomes, and at times where Mahomes finds a rhythm and finds some way to score. Do I see this level of consistent, take it down the field and put up the numbers like we saw when they got their act together against the Texans and when they got their, I wouldn't say act together because it was only a 10-point lead by Tennessee, when they finally came and warmed up against the Titans? No, I don't. I think the Niners are too good defensively to think that the only time Kansas City is going to be stopped is if they make a mistake. I don't think that's the case. I think the Niners can force mistakes, and I think the Niners can force plays that are going to cause the Chiefs to punt occasionally. The 49ers, their pass defense is only allowing 170 yards through the air. Right? That is just shut down passing defense. Now, you can make the argument that they haven't played anybody like Mahomes yet because Mahomes is on another level. That's fine. I would grant that. But I also think that that defenses here are going to play a role. And I do think Kansas City as well. You want to talk about a team that was hurting against the run early, but then really ramped it up. That's the Chiefs. The Chiefs really did get better. I never thought that given the statistics that I was looking at leading into the AFC Championship game, I never thought that they would stifle Derrick Henry like they did. You could say Derrick Henry is going to get his yards, but the Chiefs will find a way to win. And I would buy that, and I did buy that leading up into that game. But I didn't think the Chiefs were going to win that game and put Derrick Henry and his rushing mark to bed. I did not see that. Especially what I was seeing from the Chiefs statistically. They didn't look like a defense was capable of doing that, but they absolutely did. And can they do it against Raheem Mostert? And can they do that against a Niners team that really does want to run? Of course they do. Why wouldn't you want to run if you can? Right? But there's a lot to be said about the offenses, but don't sleep on these two outstanding defenses that really can cause some problems. If you get Jimmy Garoppolo to throw, and I've been arguing that obviously he can and he has done it and done it well, but that is a point in your favor if you're Kansas City. If you're taking an element of the 49ers game away that they do rely on heavily, then yes, of course. That's a point. Even if Garoppolo is capable of throwing 35 to 40 times a game. And likewise, if you make those lanes a little tighter for a guy that can thread a needle, even if it's just a little bit, and it's just enough to disrupt rhythm, if you're the 49ers, you're going to put a problem in the Chiefs offense as well. So here's a couple of things, just nuggets of information to look out for in this Super Bowl. I know we look at what Kansas City has and does, and it's easy to say they're very confident. Of course they are. Why wouldn't they be? They have an offense that's unstoppable. Or it looks like it's unstoppable. But this 49ers defense, I've seen this story play out many times in the Super Bowl, many times. So keep an eye on that as well. Jason Cole's going to join us, NFL analyst, his thoughts on what we'll see Sunday in Super Bowl 54 as we cruise on SB Nation AM.
I knew a man, Bojangles, and he danced for you in worn out shoes.
It's Thursday, which means it's Throwback Thursday on SB Nation AM. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, it's 1971 Throwback Thursday. The UCLA win streak of 88 games started on this date. Nitty Gritty Dirt Band, Mr. Bojangles, as we come back. Jason Cole, NFL analyst, joining us for Super Bowl 54. How are you, my friend?
I'm good. This is actually Jack Elway's favorite song. He used
sing
it in bars at the end of the night. Yeah.
Wow.
If Gary Kubiak once told me, if you ever want to see John Elway cry, sing Mr. Bojangles.
No kidding.
Yep.
Wow, nice bit of nugget to start this interview. That's awesome, Jason. Appreciate it.
No problem. Sure.
You know, we get a lot of over-analysis sometimes of this because we have 2 weeks to prepare for the two teams. Has anything changed for you in the last couple of days where you said, gee, I liked this storyline, or that makes me think the Super Bowl is going this way, and over the next couple of days it has changed to make you think it's going in another direction?
No. I don't buy into storylines having an impact on the game unless it's something like a major distraction, like Barrett Robbins or, you know, Stanley Wilson or Eugene Robinson, where you go, okay, this something's going off the rails. This team is not going to be able to handle what just happened in this situation, right? Or somebody gets hurt, something drastic like that. So that hasn't happened. I still think ultimately the question in this game is Mahomes going to be able to neutralize the 49ers pass rush enough to get some plays? And again, if you go back over the season, I've been talking about this the entire time. If you go back over the 49ers season, the games that they had the hardest time were against mobile quarterbacks. You know, the two games against Arizona were a lot closer than you expect. They split games against Seattle, which is not a great receiving core, but, you know, obviously Russell Wilson. They lost the game against Lamar Jackson because of his ability to move. The second game against the Rams, when Jared Goff either rolled out or bootlegged 20 times in that game, they made a conscious effort to move him around. The 49ers only won that game by 3 points. So you've got Mahomes, who's the best of that entire group in terms of his combination of being able to run and being able to throw. Can he neutralize that enough to allow guys like Mecole Hardman and Tyreek Hill and Sammy Watkins to get deep? You know, Kelsey's going to get his. There's no question about that. The question is, can you get two or three big plays out of that group of wide receivers? Can one of those or a couple of those guys come up with a, you know, big catch somewhere along the line?
In terms of that pass rush, and you talk about with the 49ers, I mean, look, Mahomes has the ability to look unbeatable and look in a way where he just takes advantage of whatever you throw at him. Is this something different? Is this something way different than what he's experienced this season?
Well, yeah, this is the best group that he's seen. I don't think, and in an abbreviated year for him because of injury, I don't think he has seen a pass rush this good. Nobody else has anything like this. So, yeah, it's a great matchup of intense strength on intense strength, okay? That's what makes this, a highlight reel game. And I think it's going to have an amazing opportunity. On the flip side of that, you have the 49ers offense with its running ability against Steve Spagnuolo and his ability in the past to come up with game plans that have neutralized elements of somebody else's offense. I mean, you know, most famously against the New England Patriots in the season where they were 18-0 going into that Super Bowl, right? So Spagnuolo has been able to game things up in the past to make this happen. So I see it as, again, wonderful matchup of strength on both sides. But the highlight one is Mahomes against the pass rush.
Let's go to Jimmy Garoppolo. He hasn't had to do much throwing in the postseason, Kyle Shanahan said, because the running game was working. But how would you assess him as a passer? He's had to do it during the season, did it against the Saints. But when it comes to him, if they need him to throw it 35 times, Jason, how do you evaluate his ability to do that against a team like Kansas City or on the level of the Super Bowl?
Look, I think he's an excellent quarterback, trending towards great. All right. I know a lot of people get on the interceptions he's thrown. Yeah, he's thrown some interceptions this season. I think that that's a product of being on the field on a consistent basis and learning what he's capable of and not capable of. You know, if you go back to Tom Brady's career in the second year of him as a starter, there were some times he threw some picks in that second year where he said, that's not real pretty, okay? This is what quarterbacks do. They learn, you know, defenses adjust to them. They figure them out. They bait them into things. That's happened for Garoppolo, even though we're talking about a guy who's in his fifth year. That's happened to Garoppolo because he hasn't had an opportunity to play a lot. You know, certainly not in New England, and then because of the injury, not last year in San Francisco. So this is the first time he's gotten the chance to play consistently over an extended period of time. So those mistakes are going to happen. At the end of the day, he averaged 8 yards per pass this year. That's a phenomenal number.
Yeah, it's really good.
That's a really great number. And it is a product of the overall offense and their running game. Just like when Matt Ryan had a great running game and Kyle Shanahan calling plays, he, I think, averaged 9.1 yards per pass that MVP season that he had. Okay, yeah, the Garoppolo is a little bit of a product of that. But he's still excellent. And if they have to throw the ball 35 times, I think it does play to Kansas City's strength. I don't think that it means that the 49ers are out of the game.
Jason Cole joining us, NFL analyst. Again, we're talking about Super Bowl 54, obviously. All right, give me an idea on Andy Reid. And look, there's going to be some sentimentality here. It's 15 years between Super Bowls. He's never won one. He's had a long career as a coach. Is he a popular guy around the league? Is he a popular guy among players around the league?
Oh, yeah. Look, Andy's an offensive-oriented coach with a strong ability to forgive people, right?
Right.
And the story that people, I don't know if they necessarily identify with, but they certainly have compassion for, right? His own personal story and his willingness to keep going in the face of both personal tragedy and professional frustration, right? So there's nothing that you dislike about Andy Reid. And I think that players genuinely like playing for him because, number one, he's a great teacher. Like, you know that you're going to be taught the way to play and the way to win. It's going to help you win games. Are you ultimately going to get over the top? That remains to be seen, and Sunday is going to be a huge part of his legacy.
You brought up Travis Kelce saying he's going to get his, and I agree with that, and George Kittle will probably likely do that. In terms of where these two tight ends are and the importance of them, are we going to see, do you think that the way these teams are designed defensively, that those guys are going to be a huge part, or is there a neutralization ability of both defenses to sort of keep them in check a bit? In terms of the tight end play for both teams, where do you see this going Sunday?
I think that it becomes hard for either team to completely neutralize the tight ends. I think that when Kittle's has been neutralized, it's primarily because he's neutralized by his own team's running game, right?
Sure.
But and his ability to block and participate in that. I if they want to get him open, they're going to get him open, even if he gets double teamed a lot. Now, I expect that Kansas City is going to do everything they can to take him away. He's still going to have opportunities in this game because you can't load up against the run and handle a tight end all game. He's going to get some shots. With Kelce, I just think he's too good a route runner. He's too good a player that you can't stop him. But I go back to, in this game, it's about the outside guys. It's about Hill, Hardman, and Watkins. Because the one play, if you go back to San Francisco's game against Green Bay, right? There's one play in that game in the second half where Devontae Adams got deep over Richard Sherman. And Richard Sherman looked like he couldn't run anymore on that play. And that one stuck out. And it was one of the few times that the pass rush didn't sort of bail out the 49ers defense. That play, if I'm Andy Reid, I circle that play. I I highlight that one and I go, we are going to make sure that we get Sherman out on our island somewhere, sometime, so that whoever he is guarding is running a lot of go routes, because we're going to take our shot. You know, it's probably going to be, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6 times in that game, depending on what they're able to accomplish. But I would be isolating Richard Sherman a lot. And I think Richard Sherman is great in a 20-yard area. When you get past that 20-yard area right now, that concerns me. We're gonna see how good his hamstrings are right now.
I did want to ask you about Raheem Mostert, because a lot of people didn't know who he was before he started running the ball well for the 49ers. He was just bouncing around practice squads for a long time. That's a great determination on his part to keep a career alive. What kind of running back is he, though? I mean, is he taking advantage of a great opportunity, or is he a sort of a rose among thorns, like now he has a chance to really blossom and show what kind of talent he really is?
I think he's more a guy with some ability who is taking advantage of an opportunity more so. But he has the ability that he has is a perfect match with what the 49ers want to do, right? And how they set up their running game. So if you get a guy who knows how to run stretch plays and knows how to hit a hole at the exact right time and has the quickness to get through it and just enough strength, not incredible amount of strength, but just enough strength to get through arm tackles and some, you know, a little bit of body traffic, then Mostert matches perfectly with what you're trying to do. I go back to Atlanta when you had the combination of, you know, Freeman and Coleman in the year that they went to the Super Bowl. That's not a top end combination of running backs. Those are not guys that you just put behind any line and they're generating yards. They have to be in the right kind of offense. To me, Mostert is, you know, similar to those guys. And you have Coleman in San Francisco. Obviously, he's hurt right now. But that's, you want that kind of matchup. And that is what Shanahan has been looking for to make that running game go. A guy who can hit a hole quickly and accelerate through it. It's very similar to when his dad was coaching in Denver and they got Terrell Davis, who was really great at running stretch plays, seeing backside holes and then hitting it right away and accelerating as fast as he could. He wasn't a power back in the classic sense, but he had great quickness and could get to top speed right away. And Mostert is that same type of guy.
Jason Cole, NFL analyst here on SB Nation AM. Really appreciate your time, my friend. Hope to catch up with you soon. Thanks a lot. Enjoy the game.
No problem. Take care. Thanks.
You got it. Again, Jason Cole joining us here on SB Nation AM. And of course, with the big game coming up on Sunday, it is time to get into the game with our exclusive sports betting partners, BetOnline. You sign up today, you receive a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. You can start betting college and pro sports right away. Every spread, every total, including those big game prop bets, which are plentiful. I mean, they're amazing. I mean, you can bet on everything from the national anthem to statistics. You can even do crossovers from sport to like the world of entertainment and the Academy Awards. Get the fastest to market odds up updates and payouts with our new sportsbook partners, BetOnline. Head over to the website today. Use your mobile device to join, and with the promo code SBNation55, you're going to receive your 50% welcome bonus. How great is that? BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. It is SBNation AM, SBNation Radio.
It's Thursday, which means it's Throwback Thursday on SB Nation AM. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
The Partridge Family, 1971. Throwback Thursday, UCLA's win streak started today in 1971. This hour of SB Nation Radio, presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. I don't care who you are, Ron Culver, this is good music. The lead singer of this song, did he die? David Cassidy. Did he die?
No, I think he's still alive.
Is he still alive?
I think so.
Thought he was sick. I'm not sure. Susan Day, we talked about her yesterday on LA Law. She was on this show.
Yes, she was.
David Bonaducci. I can't name anybody else.
Nope.
Does it?
What was the mom's name? We should be able to name the mom's name, right?
Oh, God. The mom was famous. Shirley Jones.
Shirley Jones, yep.
Yep. That was it.
I was about to say Sharon. I knew it was a sound.
You know, we can be forgiven. It's not our generation.
No.
I mean, we're not young, but we're not, you know, we're not 70 either. So Not like we were going to college in 71 and this was hitting the radio. What a weird idea for a show, though. A family that went around on a bus playing music.
I just love the intro. When you saw the little partridges coming out.
Come on, get happy.
The black screen and these little cartoon partridges. I'm like, what is this? This is kind of fun.
It's pretty awesome. And there was Ruben, the manager, trying to keep that family going on the road. By the way, Demi Lovato is going to be singing the national anthem. So here is a question, because there's a prop bet on her that is how long would she take to sing the national anthem? The over under.
Yep.
So the prop bet is, as I'm going to look it up right now, it's over 2 minutes at -220 and under 2 minutes at +180. So if you think it's going to go over, and a lot of people do, then you got to lay $220 to win 100, or if you lay 100, you can win 180 if she gets in and out in under 2 minutes. But I think the bet is over 2 minutes all the time. I think there are some people that want to do it like in. But if you're singing the national anthem at the Super Bowl, don't you draw that out? Even if you probably shouldn't draw it out,
you probably try.
Don't you do it anyway? You go longer on the words. Just because it's your stage, man. You're singing the national anthem and that's Super Bowl. Make the 2 minutes last. But what if you have somebody like a friend of yours who knows the rehearsal times? Isn't that kind of cheating? And they're like, look, I've seen her sing it like 15 times getting ready for this game. She goes over 2 minutes every single time.